Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey there, welcome back to another great episode of the Geekly Sea Podcast. David here. First off, I'm with Justin. How the hell are you doing?
I am fabulous, David. How are you?
I'm great. And we got the slurping son of a bitch with his oxtail pho in the background, Randy Van Dyke. How are you doing today?
I am fantastic. I almost spit out my oxtail.
Can you give us one big, like, powerful slurp?
Oh, hold on. Let me prepare.
Yeah,
I was intentionally trying not to slurp in the microphone, so here we go.
There we go.
There you go.
This is
only on the Geek Legacy Podcast. Pho review later on the YouTube channel. Crazy week. Did you guys check out that Black Panther trailer, Justin?
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm excited.
It's a super different looking film, and I between that and Thor, I'm really excited that it looks like the gloves are coming off with Kevin Feige's over directing, letting the filmmakers maybe do a little fun stuff. So, what struck you is fun about this trailer?
It's visually a lot going on. Like, the world of Wakanda looks breathtaking. I want to go there. And I don't even know what to say about it. It looks just like the craziest sci-fi movie ever made. Like, it looks very ambitious, and I don't know what to make of it. I'm just really excited. There's, like, spaceships, there's cars, there's fucking people jumping from 1,000 feet up in the air, climbing buildings, lots of guns and crazy combat, and it looks intense. And honestly, I have no idea what to expect from this movie, except good things. Big fan of Ryan Coogler and obviously Michael B. Jordan, so I cannot wait. Especially seeing him as a bad man. He's an angry little Jordan, and I'm not used to that.
Going back to his Friday Night Lights days, channeling little Vince, bad boy from across the way, you know, leading East Dillon Alliance, you know.
Maybe,
the West Hill Panthers.
Maybe it'll be like Beat It, and then they'll just sort of have a dance off at the end.
This is like a big FU to all Marvel fans. Like, hey, this is what happens.
Dude, it just looks crazy. There's some parts where they're in, like, snow mountains, and they're in crazy cities, and then they're, like, in desert. Like, Wakanda's got a lot of action going on.
It's a diverse topography.
It really is.
It's like the whole Star Wars original trilogy in one. It's pretty crazy. What about you, Randy? What did you think of the trailer?
Well, I learned one very important thing. The revolution will, in fact, not be televised.
That's true. It's gonna be live!
That was a fun choice of music, I thought.
No, it was. It was. And it totally fit the mood and the tone of the trailer. I enjoyed it. For being a character that, you know, until Civil War, I didn't really... I had no cultural awareness of. And now, after seeing, what is it, two trailers now that we've seen?
Yep.
Yeah, one real one teaser.
Yeah, I'm pretty on board. I'm excited for this character now. I'm way more stoked about it now than I was before. So, well done with the trailer.
Who knows?
It's got some pretty amazing actors in it too. Aside from, like, Chadwick Boseman and you know, Michael B. Jordan that we already mentioned, Angela Bassett's in it. Freaking Felicia Rashad is here on the credits. I'm like, oh my goodness, Mrs. Huxtable. I cannot wait.
We got really, Andy Serkis, Sterling K. Brown, Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
Angela Bassett.
Good stuff.
Forrest Whitaker, Lupita Nyong'o. It's like they took every high-profile African-American actor or actress and put them in this movie, and they're all spectacular.
Yes. Can't wait. I'm very, very excited.
Yes, it's like Tony Stark's wet dream is like Wakanda. It's just like something like you think like he cooked up in his head or something.
Speaking of Tony Stark, do you think this movie is going to have some sort of surprise cameo, or do you think it's going to be standalone and just have its own little style and flavor and not worry about piggybacking off of any other Marvel character?
I think if they piggyback off anything, I think they'll introduce us to the new Steve Rogers, just because, you know, Winter Soldier is in Wakanda right now. I could see, you know, bearded Captain Steve Rogers show up. Maybe he gets his, you know, his plasma shield that everyone's, you know, hoping that he gets. I could see that happening. Other than that, I don't really see, unless they want to set up like a future, like if Ms. Marvel wants to show up, you know, just to set up like, hey, this is our next movie, Ms. Marvel, come check it out.
Right.
But
I mean,
yeah,
after the credits is fine, but I really hope that they don't just sort of shove somebody in there.
Yeah, I think they're going to, I don't think they want to like Spider-Man Homecoming it. Do I think they really want this to be, this is Chadwick Boseman's movie, Black Panther, it's kind of standing its own, kind of like in the way that like Ant-Man did, and, you know, give him some after credit scene to like link, remind you like, oh yeah, Winter Soldier's there too.
Yeah, Ant-Man did kind of rely on some of the Avengers though. The appearance of some of the Avengers.
That's true. He did have Falcon.
Now, I think Guardians of the Galaxy might be a good kind of parallel, because were there any crossovers other than Thanos, I think, that we saw in Guardians in the first one?
Mm-mm. No, just Thanos.
Yeah, so
it's that big purple bitch.
I think it's possible that they can do it without. So if we use Guardians as our one precedent for it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But yeah, I'm sure there'll be some kind of stinger at the end that brings it all together. But yeah, I was really struck with how different Black Panther looked than any other film. And from what we're getting out of Thor and what the early reviews are coming out of Thor, is these are two very... I mean, obviously no one's seen Black Panther, but from what we've seen so far and what we've heard from Thor so far, is that they're very director-focused. You know, Ryan Coogler is directing Black Panther. Taika Waititi is directing Thor Ragnarok, and he has a very interesting visual style. And I think these are going to be two very important movies in the Marvel filmography. And I'm hoping that audiences show up to show Marvel that we will accept different-looking films. You know, we've kind of all embraced the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a starkly different film, no pun intended, than, you know, your Iron Man's and your Captain America's. And so I think if we can continue this train, you know, it'll allow Marvel to take more risks and to bring in more unique filmmakers. And the filmmakers themselves will want to come on board. You know, DC has gone through a lot of directors. And, you know, if Marvel can snag up these unique visionaries and let them give them, like, you know, here's a sandbox, go nuts, have fun. But I think if either of these movies don't hit, I think they're going to point to, you know, we fucked with the formula, we tried something new, and it bit us in the ass. So what I'm saying, people, is go see these two movies so we can get a better cinematic universe.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think they're absolutely going about it the right way in giving us that different look and that different feel right away in the trailer. They're not trying to make it look like other Marvel movies. So you know what you're getting yourself into by the time you go see it. They're not pulling any punches, you know?
What are you going to say, Justin?
You know, you mentioned just the two different directors and it being very director-focused and sort of a sandbox and letting them build these worlds. And, you know, I agree 100%. They are two very different movies. Even the posters for both of these movies just look really cool and different than anything that we've seen. I think they both just pop. But as you were talking, I immediately started thinking about Edgar Wright and Ant-Man. And how he had a direction for his movie, and it didn't work out. it's interesting that they were able to find some sort of balance and keeping it all in sort of the MCU to where it makes sense, which is important.
Yeah, the one that got away.
Yeah. That had to and be a heartbreaking thing for Mr. Wright, and we will never know what that movie was going to be.
Yeah, that's a real rough one. I mean, I can only imagine how just batshit crazy an Edgar Wright Batman would have been. I mean, I love the Peyton Reed version that we got, and I mean, it's the same set pieces. It's just, you know, obviously Edgar Wright's a much more visual storyteller, and he's the way he edits his films is solely unique. You could watch 10 minutes of an Edgar Wright movie and you instantly know it's an Edgar Wright film. But yeah, I agree with you, Justin. It was, it's almost like he laid the blueprint, Marvel got a ton of backlash for not letting him make his film, and now they're kind of like, maybe we'll let directors have a little more say and a little more headroom. So maybe from the ashes of Edgar Wright's Ant-Man sprung Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther.
Sure. I'll buy that. I can't wait. I'm excited for both. Thor's in, what, 2 weeks? And then fucking Black Panther's February of next year?
February, yeah.
Can't wait. All over it.
Yeah, I think, and I think it makes me even more excited for Captain Marvel. Like, to where maybe if they continue this trend, they can really, they've really got a couple directors who are great at character development. Like, maybe let the Captain Marvel movie be the real introspective film. You know, obviously we'll have all the glitz and glamour of a Marvel movie, but, you know, it'd be great to get, you know, just this real troubled character, like, you know, really capture her in all of her essence.
Sure.
Essence.
Her wetness is the beauty of whatever.
That sounds really dirty. You're still talking about Sip and Thaw? It was a reverse merman. Fish head, man, human body. It's the worst of both worlds. Speaking of worst of both, that's not a good segue, Adam. I shouldn't say that. So, Joe Randy, we got a new, we finally got a title for the Han Solo standalone movie, and since it was kept under such lock and key and so secretive, it must be something just batshit crazy outrageous. Right, Randy?
It is. It is. It is called Han Solo at Star's End.
Sweet. I love that book.
No, actually, they decided to go with something a whole lot more simple. Just Solo, a Star Wars story, which is kind of what everybody's been speculating it would be for quite a while now. Back in June, there was a leaked picture of a cast and crew t-shirt. And it just said Solo on it. It may have even said Solo Star Wars Story or something like that. So people were kind of theorizing as early as June that that could seriously be the title. And today, Mr. Ron Howard made it official on his Twitter page and had a cute little video where he just flashed up a giant, looks like a cue card, with the logo on it. So it's simple. It's elegant. It's totally predictable. But I think for his more or less reserved kind of approach with the Star Wars movie, I think it's totally appropriate. What do you guys think of the title?
Yeah, I mean, it sets up branding. I mean, all these standalone movies are going to be something, a Star Wars story. You know, we got Rogue One, a Star Wars story, Han Solo, a Star Wars story. I'm sure it'll be Kenobi, a Star Wars story. I mean, I'm fine with it. It's,
yeah.
I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's just, it's fine. Justin hates it.
I can tell his silence is seething.
Nah, it's fine. Solo.
But on a more fun Han Solo news, Randy, do you know who the characters Tag and Bink are?
You know, I had heard of them. I know they're out of the comic books, but that is all I know. I don't know anything about them. Well, what can you tell me?
So, did you see that they're going to be in the Han Solo movie?
I heard that.
They're gonna have cameos.
Fans are going nuts because apparently these are some pretty beloved characters, and I feel like an asshole because I consider myself a pretty big Star Wars fan, and for me to not know who a couple of Expanded Universe or Legends characters are, I feel like I'm totally out of the loop.
They were created by Kevin Rubio, who also created the fan film Troops, which was probably the first fan film in the history of fan films.
Yep, pretty much.
At least the most widely recognized one. And so these are characters who were placed into pivotal moments of the original trilogy in their satirical comic book. It was a funny book. It wasn't a serious book. And they also got put into the prequel trilogy stories as well. One of my favorite ones was they had to hide out because Tag is actually a manifestation of midichlorians from Darth Plagueis when he was doing his first his first attempt to create life from nothing. And so he had to hide out in Dex's diner. And he was having a patty melt or something when Jango Fett was in the booth next to him when Flo announced the next order up, which just happened to be Order 66. And something triggered in Jango Fett. And all of a sudden he wanted to kill all the Jedi. And of course, Tag and Bink were the Jedi there. So just crazy, outlandish things. They at one point stole Chewbacca's medallion. That's why he didn't have a medallion in the movie, his ceremonial medal. They were Darth Vader's two wingmen in the Battle of Yavin. And they were very popular in a series called Tag and Bink Are Dead. And They were hysterical. It was totally just fun characters that did obviously their stories didn't really count in the Star Wars universe, but they were just really fun characters. And so it's fun that Kevin Ruby, who created them, is going to play one of them, and John Kasdan, Lawrence Kasdan's son, who wrote Han Solo with standalone. Han Solo with Star Wars story, sorry. I'm going to have to use the saying that. They're going to play the characters. I'm sure it's a 2-second cameo, a blink and you'll miss it. But, hey, I like that this is the kind of fan service I think that is good. Like, they're not going to dominate it. They're not going to play an important role. It's just going to be here's our way of canonizing these beloved characters, and that's it. Does that sound like something you'd be into, Justin, or you think this is just kind of like a Dr. Ezra, I don't need this shit?
No, I think that's great. You had made the comparison to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern before we started recording, and that just cracked me up. They're just the same two assholes that just kind of show up, and they don't make it. Sad. But I think that's fun. I think it's a fun little Easter egg.
Yeah, and I think there's only like eight episodes of their comic, so it's nothing. If you wanted to go read about them, there's like you can do it in an afternoon and be better for it. So
I mean, like I've read like maybe 3 Star Wars books in my entire life, and you handed all 3 of them to me. And before episode 3 came out, I remember joking like, "Oh, there's always some stupid one-liner in these movies that you only get if you read the book." And sure enough, that business on Cadon Imodia doesn't count. And I had literally just read that book in line waiting to see episode 3. And that just was so funny to me. It's its own kind of humor. And I finally got to appreciate something like that. I felt like I was in the club.
Yeah, it was like an inside joke. And we all got to feel like we were on the inside.
Yes, and it was exciting. So I feel like these characters are on that same sort of level. So I think it's fun to reward the fans with something like that.
I agree. I love it. Swim 2 miles a day in it.
Ooh.
Rostage. I love it.
I love it. So dumb.
What I'm sure that Justin and Randy loved that I was like, I'm too scared of. We got a trailer for New Mutants, which is going to be an X-Men spinoff movie in the X-Men universe produced by Fox. We also heard that it's going to be part of a trilogy of actual horror films within the X-Men universe. So I guess I'll start with you, Justin. A, are you happy that we're getting a different kind of X-Men movie as opposed to like your standard superhero films? Logan was a big hit. That was kind of like a noir western. We got Deadpool, which was kind of an action comedy. Now we're kind of getting this horror movie. Are you excited to see diversity within the Marvel Fox franchises?
I am a big fan of risk takers. I feel like the greater the risk, the bigger the reward. So I'm all for it. The trailer itself, I thought was pretty creepy. I could have done without the sort of cliche Pink Floyd, The Wall playing in the background, but it's haunting, so I mean it makes sense. But I'm excited. I'll check it out. Sign me up.
Now, did you know it was a horror movie before you saw the trailer?
No, I did not. Complete surprise.
Yeah, same here. I kept waiting like, when are we going to see, like, powers and spandex?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of horrible torture scenes, basically.
Yeah, a wall moving and stuff like that. What did you think, Randy?
I had no idea whatsoever it was going to be a horror movie, so it completely caught me off guard. But it looks fun. It does throw you off because you see that Marvel logo at the beginning, and you're expecting something completely different. So this really feels like a departure from anything I think I've personally ever really seen from Marvel before. So how do you think it's going to go over with the typical fan base?
I never really read New Mutants, but those who... It's kind of one of those books that, like, the people who do love it are, like, passionate about it. Like, all I know about New Mutants is there's some dude named Demon Bear. That's all I know. And that they take place within the X-Men universe. So I think that people are starting to trust Fox more. They had Deadpool and Logan, and both those were pretty incredible films. So I think if they can get their marketing campaign on par with those two. Both of them had incredible marketing campaigns. That, yeah, I think they could easily do something. Now, do you think, Randy, do you think this is a good way to, you know, we always talk about superhero fatigue, that there's so many superhero movies coming out now. So we just talked recently, we just talked about Marvel and how they were kind of letting their directors make different films. Is Fox diversifying their take on the comic book franchise? Is that what their way to fight comic book fatigue and help themselves stand out from the rest of the pack, like DC and, you know, Marvel Prime?
I think that's probably the best way that you can put it. By kind of switching up or mashing up genres, or just giving the general movie-going audience something that they're not necessarily expecting from a Marvel movie, it is going to guarantee that people keep coming back, and that hopefully it'll stave off that superhero fatigue for at least one movie. I still think it's going to be a very real thing, even if we do get something off-kilter like this every so often. I think superhero fatigue is still going to be a big thing that we're going to face down the road. So they need little mini respites like this.
Good choice of words. Yeah. Now, I mean, everything is obviously the start of a franchise. You know, nowadays, movie making is all about get something that hits and then try to build a universe around it. And one of the things that really irk me the most is when they tell me there's going to be, this isn't just one movie, there's going to be X amount of movies. You know, we got it with the Dark Universe. The Mummy's not the first one, it's not the only one, there's going to be 1,000. Power Rangers, there was going to be 7. Avatar, there's going to be like 30. Justin, does it irk you a little bit when before the first movie is a success and we see it, they let us know that, oh, there's going to be X amount more, since they've already said this is going to be part of a trilogy? Should they just let us enjoy this film, and then if it's a success, build a franchise around it? Or are we just in that era to where there's so much pre-planning involved that they can't do that? They have to start work right away.
Yeah, it feels like that is definitely the case. And obviously, Marvel kind of hit the ground running with that, and it doesn't always work. We know that because of that Robin Hood movie that's never going to happen, and the Universal Monsters has already fucking crashed and burned twice. So it doesn't always work, but I like the idea of them investing in a property for the long haul. I think fiscally that makes sense if you get all your ducks in a row and you're able to build off of it that way. But I'm a little bit more old-fashioned, and I like the idea of having a standalone, and if it's a hit, then building off of it. I mean, all these characters and New Mutants, whatever you said, Sandface and Rusty Cage or whatever their names are, I think that all of these characters, since they're all sort of like D-listers that are all probably unique and fun in their own way, I think it would be great for them to show up in your Deadpools and your New Mutants and any new, what's that other one? X-Force? Is that a new movie?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. stuff like that. I think that's fantastic. It'll encourage people to go back and read some of these classics. You know, Chris Claremont he wrote the book on a lot of these fucking X-Men characters and weirdo yahoos, so it's kind of cool for people to go back and just dig into the comic books of the 80s and 90s that we grew up with, so I kind of like that, and then just the idea of sort of maybe even rebooting a lot of these franchises and people getting their own books, I think that's good.
Yeah, Chris Claremont actually created the New Mutants, so good pull there, Justin, good pull.
He's kind of my X-Men go-to guy.
It's a safe bet. I mean, he was with X-Men for like 800 years and wrote like everything, so it's always a safe thing to put out. You brought up the Dark Universe, you know, kind of crashing and burning twice. Do you see they also have kind of postponed Bride of Frankenstein, which was going to be the next
Universal Dark Universe?
And so there's rumblings that Dark Universe might not be a thing anymore after the Mummy's performance.
It's just not good, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was said. I mean, they attached a lot of talent. I mean, Angelina Jolie was in deep talks to play the Bride of Frankenstein. Javier Bardem was going to be Frankenstein, and then Bill Condon, coming off, you know, his directing of Beauty and the Beast, huge hit, he was going to direct it. So it's kind of strange, but you know, I guess That's what happens when you make a terrible, terrible film and let Alex Kurtzman direct it.
Right. And see, for me, like this amazing era of Hollywood, I think it would be so cool if rather than remake the movies, they just re-release them. And it would be fucking badass to just go and sit in a theater and watch Frankenstein or Dracula. I think that would be so much fun. Like, just make it an event, make it a spectacle, like invite everybody, and just kind of relive these great magical moments instead of trying to recreate something that's impossible to do.
Yeah, like do something like they do around the Oscars where they like show like all 9 Oscar movies.
Yeah.
Like in a day, like I bet people would get on board that, like if like around this time of year, like around like the Halloween time, if for like a month, you know, there was just like one screen at, yes, these multiplexes right now is kind of a shit time of year where they have screens that aren't being used. One multiplex, all it's doing the entire month is just showing old horror movies, and you pay whatever amount they charge you, and you can stay as long as you want to watch these horror movies. And, you right. know, they'd make killing off concessions, and they can't be paying the studio that much to get a copy of 1929's Mummy or something like that.
Yeah, so. I know, right? A Frankenstein movie? Like, it's alive! Fucking, that's like 1931, dude. What's his, like, Clive? Colin Clive?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, and I got intrigued by that from watching fucking Weird Science, for crying out loud. It was another movie where people were making a pop culture reference that I just became obsessed with. That is the only reason I even knew what the Universal monsters really were, like Invisible Man, Wolfman, Dracula, all that crap, Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's all stuff that I became fascinated with watching other movies showing these movies. I was like, what are these crazy movies? And I would love for the chance to see them on the big screen. I think that would be fantastic.
I agree. I would definitely be down for that. But movies are getting smaller on the small screen. Netflix, everyone's favorite streaming service, maybe trying to get a jump on Disney's soon-to-be-released platform, has stated that they will be releasing 80 original films in 2018, and that's on top of their plan to release 30 animated series or movies in that same time period. And that's not even counting all of their current original shows, like, you know, Ozark, House of Cards, Orange New Black, and etc. So they're gonna pony up about $8 billion, they said, on original programming this year. That's coming on the heels of learning that they lost upwards of $20 billion in their current fiscal year, and their stock just will not stop going up. So, like, the world seems to be backwards.
Yeah, I don't understand. Here. I don't understand how that works.
I mean, they're just trying to create, like, kind of like Amazon always lost money until recently, like, but now, like, everyone has to have Prime. Like, what do you mean I got to pay for my shipping? I get mad if I'm somewhere and they're charging me for shipping. Like, what is this bullshit? Mm-hmm. They just want to be that brand. They want to knock Hulu and Amazon and this new Disney streaming service. They want to knock them all off. So it just becomes, you know, Netflix is the only game in town. And, you know, they just raise prices $1 to $10.99, I guess, now or whatever. And then they up the price for 4K streaming to $13 or $14. So, you know, they're getting that recognition and they up the price. So Randy, as a filmmaker, does that excite you that Netflix looks like it's looking for some new projects?
That does excite me because that's going to basically make a lot of jobs or make a lot of availability for people who are just wanting to make content for the world to see, just to get it out there. A lot of times for independent filmmakers such as ourselves, we look at Netflix as kind of a place where movies go to die. Because typically, unless you have any kind of like stars or anything in your movie, you know, when you go to Netflix, they give you a relatively small flat rate. And, you know, you never really see a penny beyond that, no matter whether 5 people watch it or 5 million people watch it. But if you are branded as a Netflix original, that means that they are going to spend a little bit of money promoting the project. There's a certain level of quality associated with it. And if you can get in a project under that label, you're going to get more eyes on it and more support from Netflix itself. And probably a halfway decent budget. So that is pretty exciting from an indie standpoint.
That's right. I'm going to pitch them my Quantum Leap reboot. But this time,
shit.
It's Sam Beckett's daughter. And she has to go back. She has to jump to try to save her dad because, you know, at the end of Quantum Leap, Sam Beckett doesn't make it home. And so, you know, we were treated with this title card that said, "In Sand Beckett never made it home." Not true. His daughter is going to take up the mantle, and she's going to leap back and forth with the help of Ziggy and Al, and they're going to try to find him. No? All right. I'll keep workshopping it.
So...
what else you got?
As a consumer, though, someone that watches Netflix, last night, this was the problem I had. So I can appreciate that they want to have 80 new, original programming for next year or whatever. But last night, I spent 90 goddamn minutes trying to find something to watch, and there was a billion shows that I never even heard of. And all I wanted was just an oldie but a goodie, and it was just not in the cards. It was just a million different shows that I had no idea what the fuck they were, and I wasn't interested in a single one of them. So, I mean, I was even at the moment, I was like, man, why am I even paying for this fucking service? Because, bottom line, sometimes I just want to watch, like, fucking Police Academy or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, forbid you're watching it with someone else, because then you both have to decide on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if Amy and I are scrolling through something, we can never find something that we can agree on.
It's impossible. I literally spend the length of an entire feature film trying to find something to watch, and it is infuriating. Can't stand it. But then
when you think of a movie you want to watch, and it's not on there.
Yeah, and it's not. It really isn't. So I have actually spent more of my time watching HBO and Stars just because it's movies. Sometimes I just want to watch a fucking movie. I'm not interested in some new series that is on Netflix. They're not all amazing. They're not all fucking home runs. Some of them are terrible.
Yes. They're not all season 2 of House of Cards.
No. It's driving me up a wall. So, like, right now I'm watching Big Mouth on Netflix. Terrible. I haven't laughed once. Watching American Vandal. It's kind of funny. It has its moments, but it's not... I got to take breaks. I can't binge watch it. You know, Netflix created this idea of binge watching, and all their shows that are on here, I watch one, maybe two episodes, and I don't go back. Mm-hmm. The binge watching is not a thing anymore for me when it comes to Netflix.
Have you watched F is for Family?
No. It's on my list.
It's pretty good. It's an animated comedy based off of like a... Bill Burr's comics,
right.
Comedy shows, and it's real funny, and it's real short. The first season's like 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And they're like 30 minutes each, so like you blow through it like an afternoon, but I think they have 2 seasons out right now.
Yeah.
That was one of those few ones. It's one of those few ones that was suggested that I actually liked.
The only thing it fucking ever suggests to me is The Ranch. I am not interested in The Ranch at all. And no matter what I watch, it's like, oh, you like fucking Schindler's List? You're going to love The Ranch.
It's Ashton Kutcher, and he's ranching.
It's fucking stupid.
I'm more Thousand Island guy myself.
I pretty much only use Netflix now to just watch The Office. I just go back and forth between The Office and Arrested Development. Those are the only 2 shows I'm watching right now.
I binged Parks and Rec like a couple months ago to watch that again. That was worth it. I like that show.
That's funny. You got jammed. But
you got jammed. But, yeah. You have the same problem, Randy? Can't find shit to watch on Netflix? They say they got 300 trillion hours of shit on there and ain't nothing on.
Yeah, whenever I'm caught up on my series, that's how I feel. But there's a bunch of stuff right now that, like, I still haven't finished the most recent season of House of Cards. I'm only, like, halfway through. And I haven't even started The Defenders yet, so I'm way behind the curve there. And there's a few other series that I just haven't had a chance to watch the most recent season. So right now I'm backlogged, but during those times when I am all caught up, I'm like, God damn it, why do I pay for this, you know? Not worth it.
I know it.
Especially when you watch the same show for like the third time.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen The Office, I've seen Lost.
Dude, I've watched The Office probably like 11 times now. I just keep going back to it. I'm like, fuck it. This is tried and true. It's perfect.
It's a great show to have on in the background.
Yeah.
Like when you're doing shit, especially if you've seen it 11 times.
Yeah, because then you just kind of know it all by heart. It's no big deal.
I watched the episode the other day. It was when they were pranking. It was April Fool's, and it was Asian Jim.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like my Oh, man, yeah. Like, what are you doing? No, you're not. I'm Dwight, what are you doing?
And like the photo's all doctored to have him on it, and yeah, he knows the voicemail password and all that stuff.
And Pam gives him a kiss and says, yeah. Oh, man. I love it.
Good stuff.
Love,
good stuff.
Love, love. Yeah, I mean, that's all I got. You guys got anything else? Any milestones that we may have missed?
I don't think so. Trying to think of some last minute stuff, but I got nothing.
Yeah, you. Well, actually, you and Steven on the Pixelated podcast, you guys were talking about microtransactions and like loot boxes and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I mean, I'm an older gamer. You know, I came from the generation of the NES and whatnot. So for anything outside, you know, you guys had made a ton of great points about, you know, like trying to get like the skins for Overwatch and stuff like that. And I think as far as microtransactions go, I know this isn't a video game podcast, but I am 100% fine with like vanity things like the Overwatch skins, or like if you want like a mount or a pet in World of Warcraft or something like that. I get my gears grinded when it's something where it becomes like a pay to win type scenario, to where like if you can get, you know, better weapons faster, or better armor, or this upgrade or something like that. I think that those kind of microtransactions ruin games, and I just wanted to put in my two cents because when I scream at my radio, you guys don't hear me.
Right, right. I think we feel that way too on the show. That's pretty much
the
sentiment that we echoed. My biggest thing is, I mean, I love the idea of developers continuing to make money after the game is out. I think that is fantastic. They need that money to make new games, to improve the games that are already out. It just keeps the wheels in motion. Fantastic. My problem is when you're the gambling aspect of it, where you're spending real money on these boxes that could contain junk. And that just becomes addicting. If you have an addicting personality, or you know, you're a habitual gambler, it could really lead to digging you pretty far down a hole, and that's what can be sad for people, especially if it's something where it's a card on file and you don't really feel it until it's too late. It's not like you're taking 20s out of your wallet and sticking them in a slot in your computer or your console. It's literally just, yeah, give me more, give me more, give me more, give me more, until you have what you want. And before you know it, you've spent, you know, it could be a couple $100. And it's just important for everyone to play responsible. But I brought that gambling thing all the way to, like, those stupid blind boxes that Funko makes. I mean, I have a billion of these stupid fucking things. These little bitty, tiny vinyl guys. Like, I was obsessed with Spider-Man, right? And I just had to get all these Spider-Man figures, and I got Doc Ock like 5 fucking times. And it's like the worst version of him ever, where he's got like a bowl haircut and yellow gloves and sort of the green jumpsuit and yellow boots. So he just looks like a super nerd, and I have 1,000 of them. They're going to make Cracker Jack stocking stuffers for all my friends, because I just have a million of them. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. You know, I'm just forking over $6 at a time to hope and pray that I not get a Doc Ock, and sure enough, I just keep pulling them. But I mean, that goes all the way to baseball cards, Pokemon cards, whatever, you name it. In a sense, that you're betting that you're going to get something that you want, and that can just be frustrating.
Yeah, I don't know why it just resonated with me. I was like, God damn it.
I mean, like with World of Warcraft, they have their own shop where you can purchase specific mounts or services. You know, you can level your character faster or get vanity pets, vanity helms. Yeah, I think they have like a couple different helms now or whatever, but that's all fun and dandy. And that same goes with like you know, like League of Legends and stuff like that, where you're buying champions. You know what you're getting. That is completely different than a box with a handful of items in it that could be a skin, could be a weapon, could be a fucking a token of some kind. Who knows? And if you just have rotten luck and you keep pulling, you know, crap, that's going to be frustrating. And we have no idea what the odds are on what you're going to get on any particular item. And so it's really tricky. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, because you're always like, one more. Just get one more. I didn't get it. Shit. One more. One more.
Pretty much.
It's like the 7-Eleven mentality. If I pay like a quarter more, I get this much more. But then if you pay a quarter more on that, just before you know it, it stacks up. But I also saw a super funny commercial for the Shadows of War game, the sequel to Shadows of Mordor. It's like called like Eat It, Jerry. Have you seen it?
No.
It's the only reason I thought it does a poor job of like explaining the Nemesis system, but it totally made sense. It's this orc and he's just griefing this old man named Jerry, and so like he keeps doing stuff. He's like, "Eat it, Jerry," and then he does something. It's like, "Eat it, Jerry," and like it kind of flashes back to like a younger time, and it's a young Jerry, and he kills this orc, and he says, "Eat it," whatever this orc's name is. And so it was just the play on the fact that, you know, the orcs remember and the with the Nemesis system and whatever. But it was just kind of a funny commercial, and it was like, "Eat it, Jerry."
That's fantastic.
It was fun marketing, but
dude, the Nemesis system is incredible. I mean, it literally changes the way the video game is played, and these characters that you have interactions with, they remember, and the game changes based on your experience that you had. If you maybe shot an arrow or it exploded, a campfire, and that orc burned, that orc is now going to not only be afraid of fire, but his face is going to be all fucked up, and he's going to remember that you're the asshole that shot that arrow at him, and if he finds you, he's going to try and kill you. It's fantastic.
And that's like the incredible, like, future of gaming type stuff that like we always wanted as a kid. Like that's like incredible. Like, and I don't know, are more games doing it, or is like EA have like a patent on that shit?
It's a monolith. They created this Nemesis system, and I don't know what the details are as far as other games doing it, but they have that shit on lockdown, and it is incredible. It is a completely new way of playing video games, and I can't say enough about how incredible it is.
Yeah, I didn't play Shadows of Mordor, but like just listening to you and Steven talk about it, like what one Comic Con or something like that, like, yeah, and then there's this Nemesis system where like you remember, and I'm like, why is it taking so long to do that? That's right. That's rad.
It really is. It's cool, man.
Few games are cool.
Yeah,
who knew? I had more time to play.
I know. You know, that's what's funny is sometimes you have a game like this where there's this new gameplay mechanic that just revolutionizes the way we play video games. And then that's fantastic. But there's some other times where I just want to be a little yellow guy and eat little balls and run away from ghosts. It's crazy that they're two very different types of video games, and I enjoy both equally.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. I think that's why I really love like the SNES Classic and stuff like that. It takes you back to when games were just a little bit simpler.
Yeah.
You only had a couple buttons. But yeah, cool beans. What about you, Randy? What do you think of the Nemesis system?
Pretty sure I haven't played any games with the Nemesis system, so I have no horse in this race.
It just sounds so cool too. Like if I saw that in a package, it's like with Nemesis system. I'm like, oh shit, that's like the new Blast Process.
Yep. Now it's on. Collect your rings.
Could you imagine like in like a World of Warcraft like scenario, like every time you kill a boss, like he remembers, like this fucking guy.
And that's just it. And like if the boss, let's just say that an orc kills you, even if it's a random orc, that random orc will now get like promoted in the ranks, and it'll become like a lieutenant, and it gets armor, and then it gets its own little clan, and then if I saw that this orc killed you, I could actually avenge you. I'll say this orc killed fucking Snacky Cakes, and then I'll be like, oh, that motherfucker. So then I'll go out and try and track him down. And if I kill him, then I get sort of like a bounty on him. It's crazy.
I like the idea that like the random orc who killed you gets promoted.
Yeah.
Guy killed a lot of orcs, and you got him.
Yeah, that's literally how it works. It's incredible.
Yeah. They should make a bigger deal of telling people about this.
Yeah, I know, right? Not everybody knows.
Yeah, but
you can pick up the first game, Shadow of Mordor, usually for like $10, and it is incredible. It is a breathtaking journey. It is an absolute marvel of storytelling, David.
If I knew nothing else about Shadows of Mordor other than the Nemesis system, that would be enough for me.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, nice. What about you, Randy? You got anything else for us?
I got nothing.
Nothing. Well, all right. Well, thanks for joining us for our 251st episode of the Geeky Legacy Podcast. Sorry we didn't make a little hubbub about the 250th episode, but of course we always appreciate everyone who listens to us each and every week, and we would love to hear from you. So if you want to reach out to us on Twitter @Geeky Legacy, we'd love to to chat about you, if you want to talk about the Nemesis system, you know, we're open to it, or anything else geek-related. But other than that, go to geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews, and make sure you listen to the Pixelated podcast that we were just talking about, and you will not be sad that you did. Until next time, I will talk to you another time.